It is all about email. We're going to be looking at the 7 best email productivity tools and tips. We have plenty of feedback and much more coming up next. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs with episode 230 for April 4th, 2012. Joining me as usual from the lovely Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, is the equally lovely Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hey, Martin, how are you this morning?
I am not complaining just yet.
Very good. I have to smile when you say the lovely Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. I ran into Ryan Rosenthal at a family confirmation event this weekend. Met some of his kids. And so now his oldest daughter has had the opportunity to meet both of us. She was just kind of our little groupie. And it was really cute. And then his son said, oh, yeah, she's from Sleepy Eye, isn't she?
You are putting Sleepy Eye on the map.
It is a happening place. So, hey, I've got a political question for you
this morning. We try to stay away from politics, you know, on this show.
Steering you right there. This is actually a knowledge bowl question that my oldest son had. And it is, what is the form of government which science would be in control of all decision making? Scientists, engineers, and technologists would have knowledge, expertise, or skills that would compose the governing body instead of politicians. Have you ever heard of that form of government?
I have not.
It is called a technocracy. And you can even read about it in Wikipedia. So my son came home from school all excited. I got a knowledge bowl question that I knew. And this is like not just this fictitious thing.
This is real.
It is fictitious. I mean, it doesn't exist, but it's
something
that's been
it will be real because geeks will rule the world.
There you go. So I thought that was just entirely appropriate for the Wells
Tech
podcast in this political season. So we can only hope.
Yes. All right. I have to say, Sally, that with the new Skype, you get a little icon in the upper left of my screen, and you're, even though we're not doing a video podcast, I feel like you're right here with me.
Lucky you. Yeah, I've got you staring at me as well, so I'm not sure if that's maybe just a little bit too creepy. I'm much better voice-wise than I am in person.
Yeah, so. As I weave from side to side, your eyes are definitely following me.
Yep. Got the evil eye on you, so
right.
Watch out.
I'm watching you. Yes, I'm doing the watching you signal, you know, the two fingers. Yeah.
Sure.
What are we talking about today? We have a 7 best show, don't we?
That's right. We have started a new series this year, and we're, I think, on our third one of these already. 7 best email productivity tools and tips. This has got Martin Spriggs written all over it. He's our productivity guru.
Yeah, but I would say I fail on occasion with my email management, too, which is the reason that we have this kind of show, and I think that is a common issue. Because of the number of emails I think we all get, it's important to be a good steward of our email systems, and that's what this show is all about, 7 best email, not just tools, not just software tools, but tips as well, things that just good general hygiene, let's say, of your email. And these, we tried to pick things that would be cross email platform, but we didn't always succeed because there are definitely some things in here that are for maybe just Gmail or for Outlook. Those are the two big ones that I run across, and I use both of those too, as do you. But I'm sure there are other people out there that use the Hotmails and the Thunderbirds, and there's all kinds of different tools out there. On the Mac side, there's Mac Mail, but we tried to put together a list that hopefully will be useful to everybody. So we should start probably at number 7, right? right?
Yeah, doing the old countdown thing. And lucky for us, we had some listeners that helped us out along the way. And we always love to hear from our listeners. And this time, I think Rob Gunther, Pastor Rob Gunther up in Alaska, would get the gold star for sending in some amazing ideas that he uses to stay productive with his email. And this first one we're going to mention is from him. It's called Follow Up Then. Mm-hmm. I think we've maybe talked about this on the show in the past, followupthen.com. And it allows you to email their servers, basically, with a date and time in the future that you would like a reminder email sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it will tickle your inbox with whatever reminders you need. Examples, 2 minutes at Follow Up Then. If you email that, then 2 minutes later, you're going to get an email with that information sent mm-hmm. back to you. You can say next Wednesday, you can say tomorrow or one day or 1 month, or there's lots of different configurations of using this service, but a great way to just stay on top of things that you need reminders of.
The way, one kind of cool feature is it doesn't just remind you, it can remind the person you're sending the email to. So if you put them in the I think they configure the CC and the BCC fields a little bit differently. So if you put let's say 1 day at follow up, then it's going to give you a one day follow up. If you put that in the CC field, it follows up with you and the recipient in 1 day. If you put it in the BCC field, the blind carbon copy field, it just follows up with you. So you have some flexibility there, too. So it it kind of keeps everybody on the productivity bandwagon as far as emails are concerned. And it's free, as you mentioned. No account required. You can just send it, and it works. I think there are some premium features that you can get. But this is pretty cool, pretty simple, and that's the key.
It is. And, you know, I have a calendar, and at times I put events on my calendar. But even when things are on my calendar, it's nice for me, so connected to email, to get those timely emails that remind me of important things. So I think this is a great option.
Yep. And there are plugins that do this for Gmail, and Outlook has this built in where you can send yourself a reminder. But good stuff. Next one, since we're talking about Gmail a little bit, this is I believe this is Gmail only. And we have mentioned this on the show. In fact, I think I made this a pick a while back called Active Inbox. Their tagline is Effortless Email Excellence.
Just got
rolls
the
off the tongue, doesn't it? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask the question, is your Gmail out of control? So this is definitely a plug-in. I think it works Chrome and Firefox only. So this is a pretty narrow field. But usually Gmail users are Chrome or Firefox users anyway. Tends to work best there. And this is a whole productivity system. And it kind of takes its cue from GTD, which we've talked about in the past, or Inbox Zero. Maybe some people are familiar with that as well. And it just is a layer on top that allows you to tag certain emails with different next actions. So it's something that you're either going to do the very next thing when you have time, or you can assign it a someday category or a waiting on category. You can attach it to a deadline or a calendar. You can escalate things. So it works seamlessly with your inbox and your calendar, and it kind of creates its own little task list that you can manage. So it's a full productivity system. There's keyboard shortcuts. It groups conversations together. It does some formatting for you so that you can highlight different things. There is a free version, but there is also a paid-for version, which gives you some additional features, which I'm just looking that up. The paid version is $24.95 a month.
Wow, that's a lot.
Or not a month, I'm sorry.
A year?
A year.
That's a little bit better.
A year, yeah. And I don't know exactly what that gives you, but I know at some point I looked at that and thought, maybe I don't need all that. But so
you're
definitely
good with
try
the free
out
version.
Don't try out the free version before you take you go whole hog with the $24.95 a year version.
So. Maybe, Martin, worth pausing for a second in our countdown list and just doing a quick overview of GTD for those that may be new to that. I think by now GTD has kind of proven itself as a real standard. Maybe it's not just a fad, but really a great way to organize. GTD stands for Getting Things Done. It's a productivity system written by David Allen, and you can go to davidallenco.com and learn more about it. But there's lots of these tools to make it happen. The concept is that you look at your to-do list, your email, all the things that are coming at you, and you make decisions on it, whether you want to do an action currently or defer it to a later time or assign it to someone else. And you get it on a to-do list, and your to-do list is organized and easy to access and trusted. And so, read up more on GTD if you're looking to learn about that productivity system.
Yeah, the concept is you have multiple lists, not just one to-do list, but you break out your list by context. So you would have a calls list, or you might have a list for an associate that you work with that when you meet with them you want to talk about these things, or you have an email list, or you have an errands list, those kinds of things. So you've got the right list at the right time.
When David first came out with this book, there weren't all these lots of tools in place, and obviously over time the tools have gotten better and better.
Industry is up around this, and this is a good example of that.
So. Exactly. So if you're a Gmail user and you want to do the GTD thing, this is a good thing to check into.
Good. What's number five?
Number five on the list, boy, give me a challenge. Is it Zobni?
Zobni,
I'm really great
yes.
at these internet pronunciations.
X-O-B-N-I, yes. Zobni. Have you used Zobni before?
I haven't.
Okay. Zobni is a plugin that works for, on the desktop, it works for Gmail and Outlook. So, again, it's a kind of disclaimer of the show a little bit at the beginning that we're going to talk more about Outlook and Gmail than anything else. But that's what the plugin works with. It also has apps for Android, iPhone, and BlackBerry at this point. But basically, it organizes and searches through all of your contacts and connects them in a smart way. The way they what's their tagline here? Smarter contacts, and they leave out the E there. The only contacts app you'll ever need. So it groups your contacts in any way you want. It will show you how you've interacted with your contacts. It'll show you any meetings you've had with them. It will show you any files you've exchanged with them. It makes it a lot easier to search and tag content by contact. So it's really kind of contact-driven versus email-driven. And then it also connects with all the social networks so that you can see when you click on an email all of the social activity that goes along with that particular contact, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you know, whatever. It hooks all that together. It's probably biggest feature that I've used is its search. You can really find things quickly because it's constantly indexing your entire system, your contacts, the emails that you have with those contacts, and you can easily find a conversation that you had with somebody in the recent past or the distant past, even if you know just a little snippet of what that email conversation was about. So it does a great job at indexing. And it really is we talk about the Wells Tech show notes page as our brain. This is kind of the brain for your email. It just kind of captures everything and then connects it with people, which is what you want to have happen.
And the price, Martin?
I believe there is a free version, but there is a pro version as well. And when you do pro, you get, let's see, what do you get here? You can search locally an archived email. There's some advanced search features. I don't know if you need those. Yeah, you have to do the pro version if you want to use the mobile versions.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to do the mobile thing, there's backup in the cloud on the paid version, that kind of stuff. So there's a little more spam management that goes with the pro version as well. So, and again, that, did I say the price? That is $4 a month if you go yearly, something like that. So $7.99 a month. So it's a little more expensive. Yeah. It depends on how much you live, you know, in your email. So it's a cool interface. They've done some great things with this. It'll link tasks, appointments, like I said, files. They've done a nice job.
You know, I'm more than willing to pay for a service that's going to help me out and be a plus to my productivity. Mm-hmm. My challenge is, paying for it, maybe setting it up or not setting it up quite all the way.
Right.
And then kind of forgetting that it's there because mm-hmm. things start working for you seamlessly, but maybe you aren't taking full advantage of them. So I'd recommend people to just spend the time, get it set up, explore all the possibilities before you forget what a great job it's doing for you and let it do its work. So
yep.
It's a challenge.
All right. Well, we should move on to number four, Sally.
Number four, that looks like one for me. It mm-hmm. says funnel all email accounts to Gmail, and that is something that I do. I always tell my classes and things that I teach that I have a split personality because I have a lot of different email accounts mm-hmm. for all the different work and jobs that I do. I have personal email. I have an email for our church and school. I have one for my work, obviously, and one for different domains that I manage.
Right.
You know, as I set up domain accounts and things, you want to have an email there. And so what I've found to be most helpful for me is to add all of those email addresses to my one central Gmail account so that everything comes in there. I can still tell to which address it was addressed to, and I can even reply from
yep.
those different addresses if you set it up correctly in Gmail. But then I just have the one spot to check, and I'm confident that everything's coming in through that one Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
When I set up a new device, a new smartphone, a new iPad, whatever it may be, I can sync to that one account and be confident that I'm not missing any of my email. This seems to be a great it gives me peace of mind that I'm getting everything that's being sent to me.
Now, that would be just email, just Gmail accounts, right?
Gmail no, addresses? You can set up all kinds of addresses. It doesn't have to be just Gmail.
Okay.
If you go into the settings, you can add any address. As long as it has IMAP or POP3 support, you can get it in there.
So, again, then you get the features of all the spam management that Gmail
yep.
provides. One nice thing, and I do this too, but I only do it for Gmail accounts. I didn't realize that you could do it for others,
mm-hmm.
is you can create a different signature based on the account you're responding with. So at the top, mm-hmm. you got a little configurator saying, I want to respond as this email account user. And that can be different. So you can separate personal from professional or church from school or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have to manually, you know, type in your signature based on what email you're responding as. So Gmail does a good job with that.
Gmail is my psychologist, combining all my multiple personalities.
Okay.
So. It's the way to go.
Yep. Number three solves a problem that maybe some people don't know they have, and that problem is repetitive, typing the same stuff over and over and over. We just talked about signatures, so that's a good example. You type your signature over and over and over again. But there are probably some snippets of text that you would type pretty consistently. I get a lot of the same questions in the work that I do. You know, can you recommend a hosting provider? So I would say, well, the Synod has a program with Final Web. Or what do you think about church management software? And then I can say, well, did a review. Here's a link for that. But then we have a relationship with Shepherd Staff. Get 10%. Make sure you mention Wells when you talk to them. Blah, blah, blah. I probably, you know, do that, each of those probably once a week easily. So rather than having to type that in each time, there are some tools that make that a lot easier. In fact, not just at work in email, but in Word docs or PowerPoints or whatever. And two of these tools, we have one for Mac, one for PC. The one on the PC side is called Texter. It is from one of the Lifehacker folks. They built this, and it's available on their site. It's free. It's simple. It works on, I think, almost every Windows platform. It's just a little resident program that sits there, and it's just waiting for you to type a couple key characters and then hit some kind of either enter key or space or whatever. So let's say you, for instance, Final Web. If I'm going to type my Final Web paragraph, I would say my trigger is whenever I type hashtag Final Web, all one word, it's going to be waiting for that. And once it sees me hit the space bar after the B, it replaces that with whatever I've told it to in the program. So two paragraphs of text in this case just goes right in where I hit pound Final Web. I just add a salutation or whatever, greeting, and I'm done. Same on the Mac side. The Mac side, I believe, is a paid-for program called Text Expander. $34.95. You can download a trial to see if it works for you. I think there are some free ones out there, but I don't think they work quite as well. Text Expander actually enables you to fill out forms as well, corrects typos. For you, those of you that code, this formats HTML and CSS code, inserts current date and time, special characters, accented words. If you're dealing with foreign languages, sometimes that's handy. It's up to version 3 from the people at Smile Software. Good stuff. They have other stuff related to PDFs and such. But this is a real time saver, I think, for a lot of people and really helps a lot in email.
And breaking news, Martin Spriggs, you're going to be surprised by this, but you can do the same thing on your iPad. There's actually a way in the general settings under keyboard to set up shortcuts as well. And on the iPad, it's even more valuable because you just don't want to keep typing all this stuff. So you go into the shortcut setting and you can add them. And the one that I use most often is just I type EML for my email address and press the space bar, just like you said, and my email address immediately fills in. And boy, do I love that, because you have to type that so much to log into things on the iPad. So,
nice.
You can do it on the iPad as well. And that's a free thing. That's just a utility there.
Very good. So that is number 3. We're closing in.
Martin.
Number 2.
We talked before about Active Inbox to make your Gmail GTD compliant, but more importantly, maybe for some, is to make your Outlook GTD compliant. And Martin, you have lots of ideas there.
Yeah, and these are all GTD related, as you mentioned. There is a whole setup guide, and we'll include all this in the show notes. There is a setup guide that you can purchase. I forget what the cost is. It's a PDF that'll walk you through how to wire up Outlook to function like GTD. So it adds the appropriate lists and categories and projects and those kinds of things. So you can do it manually.
That's kind of a geeky thing, right?
It is. Yep.
Okay.
It is. Yep.
That's good.
But it's a step-by-step, and I think anybody could do it.
Moving toward that technocracy.
Right. If you want a little bit easier, a little lower tech way, but still, you know, semi-geeky, I wrote a blog post that talks about implementing some of these, and we'll put a – that was – that was maybe a year or so ago, called Wiring Up GTD in Outlook 2010. There is also, for those of you that don't want to dig into the depths, the bowels of Outlook, there is a program that you can buy. What is the price here? Last time I looked, it was like $59 or something. It is...
We're going to have to come up with the drum roll software.
$74.95 for the full version, $19.95 for the upgrade. But it is dumb simple. You simply run the program, and voila, you've got an Outlook that's set up to manage your email more effectively using GTD. And then we have some wiki goodness here that talks through all the we did a whole what we called Wells Tech Goodness series, and this is ancient history now. This is episode 87 that talks through different things that you could consider to empty your inbox. And we do talk about getting things done and some other tools that are listed there as well.
Right. So if you're new to getting things done, that might be a good place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. That's number two.
Brings us all the way to number one. How exciting. And we want to put at the top of our list just implementing some different rules and categories within your email software. And you can do this in Gmail. You can do it in Outlook. You can do it in Thunderbird, for that matter. But this will allow you to color code and move things to folders so that things coming into your inbox have a lot more meaning to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe my husband's favorite color is purple, and I make everything coming into my inbox from him purple so that I get that visual clue that this is from my number one guy, and I want to pay special attention to it. That's just a simple example. You could send all email from a certain person or a certain group of people to a certain folder, like your church council folder or whatever it may be, so that things are organized for you without you having to do the work. Let the machine and the coding do that work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have some examples?
I do. One rule that I love, and I usually share this when I'm doing my productivity classes, is my waiting for rule. So whenever I put my own address, my own email address in the CC or BCC field, there's a rule that's, and obviously this email is going to come back into your inbox by doing that. So it's looking for my name in that CC or BCC field, and it basically removes it before I see it again in the inbox and pushes it into a folder called waiting for or category called folder and removes it from my inbox. So now, the reason I use this is whenever I'm delegating something or asking somebody to get back to me on something, I don't want to forget that I've asked them that question or assigned that task. So I can check my waiting for list on a daily or weekly basis and remember what I've asked of other people. And I can check them off as they've come back in. But then I don't have to wonder, you know, when did I send this or did I send this? The system automatically tracks that for me. So very super easy to set up. And, in fact, one of those blog posts that I mentioned, I think, has how to do that set up in there. And anybody can do that with a rule in Outlook or in Gmail. Same deal. I think all the systems have this kind of functionality.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
When you send email like that, when you're sending it to someone and expecting a response, do you visualize that you're playing tennis and you just hit the volley and you're, you know, it's in their court? Because that's what I do every time. Okay, this is off my back. It's in their court. I'm waiting for their response now.
Yeah, and sometimes you hope it doesn't come back. But
yeah. I got this visual going on. Right. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only person. Who knows? But, yeah, I tend to hit it over the net and forget about it and mm-hmm. think, well, it's their problem now, and
but this is
get
a big part. This is a big part of GTD, that when you've got those open loops, you know, mm-hmm. circling around in there, you're wondering, is it being taken care of? Where is this in the process? Did I actually ask somebody? And it creates a memory peg there for you right in your system to follow up with them at appropriate times if they're not as productive and as on top of it as you are and not getting back to you in a reasonable time. So
great idea. I know that a lot of the work of our churches and schools involves, you know, communicating with others and relying mm-hmm. on others to work with you on projects. So it's perfect for number one.
Very good. Okay. That's our seven best. What are we doing next time, Sally?
Next time we are kind of kicking off summer a little bit. We want to spend time talking about the seven best photo organizing and editing tools, because I know you're going to be taking lots of pictures this mm-hmm. summer, Martin.
You too.
Yeah.
Do you take pictures with your iPad?
I do. It's my go-to photo thing.
You don't think that looks geeky at all?
No, I think that looks super cool.
That's cool.
That's right. And I'm hoping everybody notices how cool I am. I mean, that's the point,
right?
So you
get that big 10-inch viewfinder right in front of you.
I call it my cutting board, yeah. Ah, okay. My big blue cutting board. I have a blue
very cool
wrapper on it. But, yeah, I use a lot of photo editing software on the iPad. I do a lot, you know, I have everything from turning them into comics and mm-hmm. lots of collage stuff and lots of editing. So I just enjoy doing a lot of editing, making movies, all that kind of stuff. So, but we won't just be iPad centric with our seven best list. We'll have lots of tips.
Well, that depends on if our listeners get back to us, and that's the challenge.
That's
we
right.
We want to hear from you. So if you don't want to just hear about iPad picks from Sally, you better talk to us. So give us a shout on wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment, wellstech@wells.net email. We would really love a voicemail. I mean, we're starving for voicemails, aren't we, Sally?
Yes, listen to someone else's voice besides ours. That would
and,
be great.
And 405 for Wells. That's 405-367-9357. Should be easy to remember. And then there's all kinds of other ways. Twitter, Facebook, Digo, Google+, the listserv, blah, blah, blah. It's
I don't
all
think you mentioned
website.
Pinterest.
Because it's not on the list here, Sally.
Oh, man.
That's an
oversight. I guess that would be my fault. But, yeah, don't forget Pinterest, folks.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to our ministry resources.
Sure. And this week we wanted to make mention of a whole series of blog posts. Martin, you mentioned last week on our show that Church Marketing Sucks, Copy Matters, writing for the web blog post. Mm-hmm. And there's actually, what, nine of these
nine of these.
They've gone into this Copy Matters in all different flavors. So we thought that was worthy of pulling out as a ministry resource this
week. Yeah, this is a website I follow, and really they're obviously church-focused, and they try and write posts that are appropriate for mostly people involved with digital communications in the church office. So they have a whole series, like you mentioned, nine articles on what they call Copy Matters. So writing for non-writers, writing for social media, writing for the web, 10 practical writing tips, writing better emails. Should you who should do your writing? Know what you're writing and why. Benefits, not features, and why should I care about copy? I think this is the entire series now that they've finished. I should check on that because the last one they just released was April 2nd, so not too long ago. Maybe they're not done yet. But anyway, check out the show notes page to get to these excellently written. They're not long. And I think there's a lot of common sense in here, but very good read for anybody who writes copy for digital distribution.
Very good. Thanks for that find.
Shall we move on?
Sure, you bet.
Picks of the week.
It is time for Picks of the Week, and my pick of the week is email-centric, believe it or not. Since we were talking about those seven best this week, I thought it was a good time for me to mention notificationcontrol.com. And this is kind of a one-stop shop to get access to all different social media type sites that may be sending you email. A lot of times when you go to a place like Twitter or Facebook or Google+, it may be hard to kind of figure out how it is that it's configured to send you notifications from the site. And this page actually takes you directly to the email notification settings on each of your accounts. And it has lots of the social media sites listed, eBay, Foursquare, LinkedIn, YouTube, all those different sites have permissions or varying levels of permissions to send you email. And one way to clean up your email inbox is to turn off all those nuisance notifications that you really don't need. And so one-stop shop, notificationcontrol.com, allows you to go and check out those settings and make changes to them as you desire. Pretty simple and clean and easy to use.
Cool. And it is simple. There's only, let's see, 14 of them here. The problem with these, Sally, sometimes is that they introduce you to new services that you didn't know you needed. And then you sign up for some of them. I'm seeing Dribble on here, which I have no idea what that is. Forced on here, I don't know what that is. The rest of them, I think I know what they are. But so I may actually wind up getting more email as a result.
Resist the urge to be more social, Martin. We're plenty social.
Okay. All right. My pick is actually an iPhone/iPad pick. So it's iOS only, Apple only. But it was such a find for me, and maybe you've already experienced this. But obviously, when you get iOS, the kind of the out-of-the-box experience, you use Safari on your iPhone, your iPod Touch, your iPad. And you kind of have to live within the Safari parameters, which... Yeah, sometimes okay, but sometimes it's not. And I went in search of alternate browsers, and I found one that I really like and use all the time now, and it's called Atomic Web, the Atomic Web browser. It's 99 cents, so it's not going to set you too far back. It does a couple things that Safari doesn't do very well. First of all, you can go full screen, which is really important on the iPhone. Get all the navigation out of the way. Just gives you a little bit of an overlay for you, and then you can go back to, you know, your tabs or whatever. So it's full tab browsing. Works on the iPhone, the iPad. One neat thing I like about it is there's this identify as feature. So it can masquerade as any browser, whether it be a desktop browser or a mobile browser. Sometimes you get to sites that they sense that you're on a mobile phone or even the iPad, and they only show you the mobile version. You can't even get to the regular version. Sad to say, our Connect site, our intranet on the Synod's intranet site is one of those where you have to use the mobile version, which is lousy. But with this browser, and that's one of the reasons I was looking for an alternate browser, I can say masquerade as Safari for the desktop. Or I can even say identify yourself as Internet Explorer 8. And it will function like that. Now, you still are constrained by some of the things that iOS doesn't let happen on their devices, like Flash, so you don't get around that. But it does provide other features like tabs, file transfer to Dropbox. You can pick which search engine you want to use, which I don't think you can do in Safari. AdBlock, I think I mentioned. The one caveat is you can't replace, on an iOS device, you can't replace the default browser. But you can add a little bookmarklet in Safari to say, hey, I found a site in Safari. I want to see this in Atomic Web, and it'll launch it automatically for you. But when I start browsing on my devices now, I go straight to Atomic Web. I don't even bother with Safari. So very cool. Love it.
Awesome. The only other browser I've ever played with on iOS is the Digo browser that came out quite a while ago. And I like things about it, but I guess I was just a little too lazy that I would end up back in Safari, you know, when I click a link or something. It would since it's the default, I just kind of stuck with Safari all this time. But I love that you can add this bookmarklet and jump to Atomic pretty easily.
I found no downside to not using Safari so far. So you may want to check it out. Anybody else who uses iOS, not available for Android. There are some things that are kind of similar, but I found nothing as good.
Take the 99-cent plunge.
Yeah. Okay. Should we talk about some upcoming training we've got going, Sally?
Yes, we should. This is a big day for us, announcing our final web training for the summer of 2012. And this is final web training with a twist, Martin. Mm. In the past two summers, we've done face-to-face training. This summer, we are taking it online, and we're going to do final web training via Google Hangouts, believe it or not.
Believe it or not. Sally, there's a little skepticism in your voice.
Not me.
I can see it in your eyes, too.
No, I'm excited about this opportunity. We're going to be doing the class online with web cameras and, you know, obviously audio interaction with our students. And then we'll do a lot of desktop sharing in the process. So people will be able to see us as if they're sitting in the room with us watching our computer projected on a screen. It'll just be right there on their own computer in their own settings. So dates are July 9th through 19th, actually. We're going to do two full weeks of this. The first week, Martin, you're in charge. You'll be doing final web for teachers on Monday, and then the three-day final web for dummies class on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
beginner,
July 10th through 12th.
Intermediate, advanced, yep.
And then I'll do the same thing the second week, July 16th. I'll do the teachers class, and then 17th through 19th will be the dummies class.
Yep.
And we have lots of details for you online. We'll have links in our show notes to both registration forms for Final Web for Teachers and Dummies, and also different technical specifications and things like that. If you want to find out if Google Hangouts work for you, we could probably even do some Hangouts along the way to test it with you. So let us know what questions you have.
By the way, Google Hangouts is free, so there's no charge for that. There is a charge for the class, but you don't need to buy any other technology to do it.
Yeah, so it should be fun.
We should mention that because of the limitation of Google Hangouts, class sizes are limited. Now, when we did face-to-face, I would have 20, 22 people in the building. That's not the case with this. We have a limit, a hard limit of 9 people. So if you're interested in this, don't wait till the last minute. It might fill up quickly. So there's a limit of 9 for each day on both in both weeks. So just be aware of that.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Should we move on to community feedback?
We should, because I love our community, and we have lots of feedback from our listeners this week. I'm going to start off with Pastor Clint Rogus and his recent question to you, Martin, about scanning and digitizing. Clint was looking for a solution for their church office to reduce the amount of paper that they have.
Yep.
And we've talked about this, but it's been quite a while ago that we talked about your pick, Martin, a Fujitsu ScanSnap scanner.
Yep, I have the S510, which is not made anymore, but I think the quality is still in all of their scanners. A couple things to look for when you're purchasing a scanner, which is what I told Clint. You obviously want it to do duplex, but maybe even more importantly, you want it to be able to scan right to PDF and do OCR scanning so that you can search the PDF later. And this does that through the software. So works well. It needs to obviously be sheet fed. Depends on how much you have to scan. There's these little, what they call Doxy, I think they're called, scanners, which are little... they look like a paper towel tube almost, where you slide one paper in at a time through it. They're kind of more portable. And maybe that works for people that are on the road, but I think for most church or school offices, you're going to want something that you can feed, 10, 15 sheets in and have it scan away. So,
very good. And just another link we'll include in the show notes is a link to a past episode where we talked all about PDFs and creating PDFs and maximizing or minimizing the file size, maximizing the output with the low file size. So check that out as well on a related topic. And then Clint is also a iPad owner as of the release of the new iPad. And one app that he's recommending highly so far is SplashTop. Remote desktop. And I actually have this app as well, Martin, and it actually gets around that flash issue because it allows you to work from your own desktop computer. And you can do that locally over your internet, over your wireless connection in a local setting, or you can do it, it syncs up actually through your Gmail account, of all things. You can launch your desktop. Now, I've done the remote desktop with TeamViewer. We've talked about that before on the show. I actually am leaning towards liking SplashTop a little bit more than the TeamViewer experience. One thing that SplashTop does for you is it resizes your desktop so it's not so gigantic and the screen display is so tiny and stuff. And I have found it to be very seamless. It runs your browser with Flash and all of those kind of things. Anything you can do on your local computer, then you can do on your iPad. So check it out.
And there's a cost for that, right?
I believe it's a $5 app. I'd have to look at the current pricing. Somewhere $3 to $5, somewhere in that range.
Okay, good.
So we also heard from your wife, Debbie. She shared an email that she had received with follow-up after the Wisconsin Educators Media and Technology Association meeting that was recently held.
She serves on the faculty at Peace Lutheran in Hartford, and one of her faculty members, Shelley Karstens, fourth-grade teacher there, was attending WEMTA, Wisconsin Educational Media and Technology Association. And there's some great presentations there on iPads in the classroom. And there's a couple of a bunch of stuff there on how best to consider using tablets in general, but specifically iPads. And there's a presentation from somebody, I think from Apple, in fact, that talks about different apps that they use, how they set their iPad up to be both productive and in the classroom.
Yeah, I ended up watching a recorded presentation done on Adobe Connect, and this guy, Chad Kafka, who's a teacher somewhere in Wisconsin, did an excellent presentation, just going over different applications for the iPad. I found a few that I'm going to be talking about in future Wells Tech episodes. So great stuff there.
Not sharing yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Keep it under wraps.
Okay.
So we had some tweeting going on this week with the Pound Wells Tech hashtag. Maren McPeak from California shared a link to EduCreations, which is basically a screencasting software for the iPad. It'll allow you to bring in different images and annotate them and make video recordings, and obviously very helpful for teachers being able to easily produce videos explaining things and annotating at the same time. So excellent find, Maren.
Yep.
Martin, you tweeted about Google Hangouts.
Yep. There's some additions to Google Hangouts just in time for our summer training classes. Mm-hmm. Some of them are just fun things like poker and that kind of stuff. But there's a couple useful ones here for business reasons. One of them is something called Kaku, which is online wireframing and mind mapping and diagramming, which could come in handy. And then the other one, which is very interesting, is SlideShare. We've talked about SlideShare in the past, a service where you can upload PowerPoints. But this allows you to view those PowerPoints together with everybody else in the Hangout. So good additions. And, again, this is all free. So I think this was rolling out slowly. So if you don't see it in your Google Plus account, just give it a couple of days and it will show up.
Okay. Jason Schmidt tweeted about Apple Juice with a web spelling, APPLEJUCE. And this is basically screen and electronic device cleaning solution. So I can imagine in a school setting that would be important to have some kind of good cleaner, keep the germs down and that kind of thing, especially with shared touchable devices.
This is not a DIY thing where you actually use apple juice to clean your screen?
It isn't.
Good.
The name of the company is Apple Juice. Very creative, but I'm guessing there's no actual apple material inside
or juice.
There.
Yes.
No. So, and then finally, Gail tweeted a link to a blog post from the Teaching Like It's $29.99 blog, where the teacher compared, or I couldn't say it's a fair comparison. He rolled out Chromebooks in his classroom, but this is a classroom that's got a one-to-one iPad initiative. So he says, I've got 32 iPads and we've been using them for 4 months and I got one Chromebook. So he wanted the kids to try this Chromebook and compare it. And he asked for volunteers, kids to be willing to go Chrome for a week at a time, give up their iPads and go with the Chromebook. And basically, they kept it for an hour and cried to get their iPads back. So whether it's a fair comparison or not, the kids, they were willing to.
You be the Chromebook guy for the week.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'll ostracize you.
But, I think it does point out some of the challenges with Chromebooks in comparison. Obviously, it's not a touchscreen environment and stuff. And one thing he said toward the end was maybe iPads are better for younger kids and Chromebooks for older kids, where they really do have to do
more input.
A lot more input, exactly. Yeah. So interesting article, though.
Yeah. Thanks, Gail.
Yeah. From Pinterest.
Pinterest. Yeah, yes. It's Pinterest time. We have a new segment on the show.
Yeah, we have one active Pinterest person, yours truly, who actually pinned something this week. And I thought this was worth sharing. It's a Facebook shortcuts kind of a infographic, but it basically has a lot of different shortcut keys that you can use it within the Facebook environment. It's from Make Use Of, so if you want to download it, you have to either share it or sign up for their service or whatever to be able to actually download it. But you can look at it right there on the screen and learn that you can get your profile page up or your friend request or your messages with different shortcut keys. And then they have a lot of smiley notations there. So if you want to put sunglasses on the smiley or do a heart or whatever it is, they have lots of options there for smiley faces on Facebook as well. Real breaking news.
Infographics are really good material for Pinterest, I would think. Just kind of tailor-made for it.
Exactly.
From what I know of Pinterest, that is.
Very visual. Yeah, your expert opinion there. All right. Then we have a few links from our DIGO group that we want to make mention of before we're done. First off, the On the Air's video call-in show platform. And this allows more than 10 participants in a video kind of hangout setting. So maybe Google's getting a little competition for their hangouts or whatever.
Yeah, I looked at this. I haven't tried it yet, so I am interested to see how it might work.
Mm-hmm. Next up, there was a link shared to how to use Google Spreadsheets to quickly build teaching resources. So if you're a teacher, especially in a Google Apps environment, this is part of a series on how to use Google Apps in the classroom. So maybe worth a read.
Mm-hmm.
I tagged a YouTube channel. It's called PCMS TV1, and I think the MS stands for some middle school. This is basically classroom videos, and the thing is that I think there's over 600 of them, but they're all only like 20 or 30 seconds long. And what this teacher is doing, he has a one-to-one iPad initiative going on in his classroom, and as they discover things or figure out settings and things that they want to share, they just record a quick screencast. Here's how to use EduCreations to do this, or here's how to use Splashtop desktop or whatever it is that they're making use of in the classroom. So an excellent resource if you're in an making use of iPads in your classroom.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And the last one, Martin, I think belongs to you. It's called SideVibe.
Yeah, this came through. I subscribe, or I'm in a DIGO group for educators, and this came through that, and I found it to be pretty interesting. SideVibe, they say, a simple way to place useful formative classroom lessons over any web page. So it's kind of like a DIGO approach to classroom lessons. So you can create an assignment, send people to a page. This is a browser plugin, but there's an account, a student and teacher accounts, and you get unlimited student accounts. And it doesn't need any email address or installation, really. It just works right in the browser. But it gives this little overlay lesson that gives the questions and places to put answers and notes, and the teacher can put their notes right on top of a particular web page or web pages, and then the lesson or the assignment can really be completed just in that fashion. So really nice potential. Makes a lot of sense, especially if you use web content in your lesson planning.
Absolutely. And they make the point that handing out worksheets and paper just clutters the desktop, and it kind of breaks the student's concentration from looking at the screen to have to look down at paper. This gets it all integrated on the screen. So sounds good.
Very good.
That will do it for community feedback.
All right. Thank you to everybody. We gave out the ways to get in touch with us. Those still apply here, too. So if you have something for our seven best, please do that. But if you just find stuff that you think is going to be interesting to any of our listeners, please share, and we will reshare.
Absolutely. Make sure you pin it for us.
Yeah. Next week, we're going to start a new ebook, Sally.
We are. We wrapped up our Church of Facebook last month, and so we have a couple of months to round out this school year season. We thought we would look at how to transform your small business with social media. It's a free ebook, and we'll include a link in the show notes if you want to get a jump start and look at it before our discussion next week. You're certainly invited to do that. I think it's only about 25 pages or long or so. So we'll divide it up over a couple of months and just look at some of their practical applications of using social media and try to apply that to the church and school setting.
Very good. And since we are in Holy Week, we want to wish everybody blessings on their Lenten journeys, but also a happy Easter. And to help you along with that, we're going to put a link in the show notes to the 2012 Easter message from President Schrader. Watch that on the Wells Tech show notes page. It's just a little Easter greeting from him and certainly from us. Blessings on your Easter rejoicing and celebrations to you as
Absolutely.
Well, Sally.
Thank you, Martin. You too.
All right. Let's close the show with the music of Michael Schrader. That's My King from his recent album, Worship. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
that you called me a child of mine. That's my God, that's my King, that's my Savior, my everything. Well, now of your glory I will sing, yeah. That's my Father, my God, and my King. Sometimes I fall to worry, sometimes I fall to pain. I know it's me you carry each step and every day. How much you love me was in your sacrifice. For you called me a child. That's my Savior, my everything. Well, now.